This is Living Planet, and I'm Neil King, and we recently launched a new segment called What's Better to help answer your questions about how to make greener choices in your everyday lives. And in this episode, we're going to hear from Living Planet's Kathleen Schuster, who's been asking herself a question that's quite literally right in front of our very eyes. What's better for the environment, contact lenses or glasses? Kathleen?
Would you like to say hello to me or something?
Kathleen, hello. We're here to talk about, what was it, contact lenses versus glasses. What's better, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I've been looking into whether basically the environmental footprint of glasses is better than contact lenses or the other way around. So I wanted to ask you, actually, if you want to try to take a guess. For somebody who's using contact lenses, how much trash do you think they generate in a year just by using contact lenses?
You mean in terms of tonnage? Or what are you talking about? How much?
Yeah, just by, you know, throwing contact lenses away and all the packaging. Like, how much trash do you think one person generates by doing that?
Good God. I have no idea. It would be a complete guess now. I mean, how often do you change them, for starters?
Oh, yeah. So you can have dailies, which you throw away every day. Or you can have reusables, which generally are, like, used about a month, and then you get new ones.
Right. And they all come in plastic packaging and stuff.
Yeah, so exactly.
Maybe 100 kilos?
100 kilos?
A year? I don't know. Am I way
no,
off?
No,
way
it's off? Only, it's about a kilo a year per person.
I told you I'd be way off.
Yeah, you're way. That's worse than I really thought. Thought I was bad at math.
Give me multiple choice next time, please.
So yeah, which do you think is better just by hearing it?
Well, if you're just talking about the rubbish now, I mean, then glasses definitely would be better.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, there's more to it, right? I mean, the production, the raw materials. I don't know. I would assume also making the lenses for glasses is quite energy intensive.
Yeah, it's actually what I thought was going to be really easy to research was really, really complicated.
Okay, so these What's Better segments, as we've discovered, they always are complicated, which is why we just established this format in the first place, right? So, Kathleen, I'm dying to hear what you found out.
Okay.
I called up several experts to find out how exactly the eyewear we use every day impacts the environment, and whether one type is clearly more eco-friendly than the other. One reason this is such an important question is because by 2050, about half the world's population is going to need glasses. That's according to a study from the University of New South Wales in Australia that's been widely cited. The first person I called up was Dr. Charles Ralski. He's the executive director of a nonprofit in Maine called the Shaw Institute, which studies how contaminants, like plastics, affect the environment and, ultimately, humans. Back in 2018, when he was a PhD student, he was part of a team at Arizona State University that wanted to find out how Americans were throwing away their contact lenses. Where exactly were they ending up?
Contact lenses aren't very big. It's not a substantial amount of plastic, but if you're looking at how often they're used, you're looking at this increase in daily use lenses and the amount of people that use them, it's a substantial amount.
They surveyed 400 people and found that up to 20% of the respondents were flushing them down the drain.
And if you're having that go down the drain, it could lead to a substantial amount of plastic pollution in the environment.
In this case, that would have translated to between 2 and 3 billion plastic contact lenses ending up in the wastewater in the U.S. alone. He says after they figured out contact lenses were being flushed down the drain, they decided to follow their journey through the wastewater to see if they stayed intact or got broken down.
We did a study in a wastewater treatment plant to see how the lenses behaved when exposed to microbial attack. They withstood it really well, and we actually went through the final product of wastewater treatment, which is called biosolids, basically really nutrient-rich fertilizer. And we found a couple fragments of contact lenses that we later confirmed to be the lenses later on. So it was a really telling study for us in that it survives the wastewater treatment process. They're very porous, so there's a chance that they could be contaminated with things like diseases or other types of chemicals. And they also became fragmented into microplastics.
there's growing concern over microplastics across the world, which you might associate with larger plastic objects like plastic bottles, but they can also be found in things like textiles and hygiene products. These tiny particles travel easily through the environment, especially in water systems, and can contaminate the food chain, eventually making their way back to humans.
So it seems like a small change to just go from the drain to solid waste, but it's very significant and meaningful.
Turns out, Dr. Rolsky and other researchers could have only guessed how significant and meaningful. In 2023, two health websites, the Environmental News Daily and a site called Mamavation, commissioned a study on contact lenses in the U.S. And according to that study, all 18 different types of contact lenses they tested contained high levels of PFAS, otherwise known as forever chemicals. Right now, it's still unclear whether contact lenses with PFAS are affecting people who wear them. But what is clear is that these toxic chemicals can contaminate soil and water and build up in animals, again, potentially making their way back to us. Okay, so at this point, it seems like glasses must be the better choice. But not so fast. We don't have our answer just quite yet. Yes, it's true, once glasses are in the consumer's hands, they don't really generate any trash, except for maybe the occasional wipe. But one thing we can't forget is that glasses are also a fashion accessory, and creating trash where we don't even see it. Fast fashion causes roughly 10% of global carbon emissions, according to figures from the UN, and glasses are adding to that number, especially once the frames are out of style and end up in a landfill, just like clothing and other fast fashion items. One person who's been researching this is a man named Dr. Max Jurecek. He's from the Technical University of Braunschweig in northern Germany, where he leads a group researching sustainable factory systems.
Frames are a fashionable product, so this means basically two things. It's not the standard frame everybody's using, so we have lots of different materials. And then we have a big challenge of overproduction, because if you manufacture, for instance, frames centrally somewhere in the world, and then you ship it all over the world, then they get distributed into stores, and then maybe half of them get actually thrown away. It's a fashionable product, and maybe nobody's interested in this particular frame. So we have this kind of overproduction.
And let's not forget, a lot of frames are plastic. So a high number ending up in landfills means even more plastic waste floating around in the world. Dr. Jurecek and the team he was on wanted to find out if they could tackle this problem by manufacturing closer to the consumer. They conducted their case study in Sydney, Australia, and found that they could lower the environmental footprint of the frames by 25%. The key was to manufacture them locally from recycled materials that also came from the area, rather than importing the frames from China. Part of this was because small-scale production cut down on the overproduction. They also found that consumers had a greater connection to the product. And that's a big deal when you consider how many millions of people buy glasses.
If we're looking at Western country like the United States, we are looking at nearly one frame per person per year, if we include sunglasses as well. So it's actually kind of a huge market, even for a city like Sydney. This means for us that there are several million frames sold each year, if you look at the statistics.
It's difficult to put an exact number on the environmental footprint of eyewear, though. That's because a lot of companies don't publish this data. That was something that surprised Max Jurecek and his team, and it's something that's also proven a challenge for a science communicator named Andrew Clark. In 2023, he helped found a consultancy team in the UK called Net Zero Optics. The other co-founder is his father, who became a business coach after years of working as an optometrist and owner of several practices, including one that was a national flagship. Now they're working together to help practices in the UK and beyond become more sustainable, which Andrew says is a tricky business.
We think we're just a fairly normal industry selling things that people like, and you don't think more about the detail of them or what goes into them. But I'm sitting here with a lump of fossil fuels on my face, because we are such a plastic heavy industry and the majority of it is derived from fossil fuels. And then the world is powered by fossil fuels thereabouts. You know, we are in an industry that is very international. Huge amounts of our manufacturing is done in China and over in the global east. And I'm sitting here in the UK at the end of those very, very long convoluted supply chains. So every step in that journey is either refining a plastic product or moving a plastic product. And it very quickly adds up to a substantial carbon footprint.
He says he only knows of two eyewear companies that have released reports on their carbon footprints, so it's difficult to boil it down to a number, especially considering how huge this global industry is. Right now, it's worth at least $150 billion, and it's growing fast, because by 2050, nearly half the world's population is going to need glasses. But if you're trying to decide between glasses or contacts based on waste, let's consider how much waste occurs during the manufacturing process. Take the lenses, for example, which nowadays tend to be made of plastic too.
That starts its life as a lump of plastic about the size of an ice hockey puck. It's huge. And then is very carefully shaped and, you know, huge amounts of it cut down to give only a few millimeters thick plastic on your face for the end user. The amount of waste is 80 to 90% of the original lump of plastic. It's massive.
Andrew says making the frames can generate just about the same amount of waste too. Okay, so what about sustainable frames? Take acetate, for example. It's a really common plastic used for glasses, and it's made from a mixture of plant-based materials and fossil fuels. But now there's something called bioacetate, which is being touted as a sustainable material. Andrew says this is very skillful greenwashing, though.
Now, that bioacetate, yeah, it might have a greater than average proportion of cotton or castor bean in its physical makeup, but it will still include a good percentage of, by mass, of directly fossil fuel derived materials. And that, to me, is a horrendous example of just outright greenwashing, because it's entirely wrong to say that a product that is 30% directly made of fossil fuels is sustainable. It cannot be. I would liken it to creating a burger. You couldn't possibly get away with saying, oh, this is a vegan burger, 75% of it's of plant-based origin.
So plastic remains a big problem for all types of eyewear. On the one hand, it's light and cheap, and crucially, it's thanks to plastic that we have so many options when it comes to what's also a very important medical device. But on the other hand, eyewear isn't so easy to recycle. The harsh reality is that only a very small fraction of plastic, less than 10%, actually ends up getting recycled. That's because there are different types of plastics and contaminants that get thrown away. Separating them is a complicated process. A piece of good news, though. A handful of specialty recycling programs have popped up in the US and the UK over the past few years that handle both contact lenses and their packaging, and glasses too. Andrew says in the UK, drop-off points at opticians' practices have turned out to be popular, but it's still early days.
And because they are such a weird bundle of different types of material, largely plastic, but there's bits of metal in frames as well, in terms of the hinges and other bits, they can't immediately be recycled. So those recycling centres separate materials into their component parts, and then you're left with plastic and plastic-like products that you can't turn into anything else. And so those plastics are mixed with other difficult-to-recycle plastics, and they're basically shredded and heated and compressed in a cocktail of other strange plastics and turned into a very durable board that you can make construction sites and playgrounds and, you know, really cool stuff out of. It gives this plastic a viable second life.
The only downside to it is that it's not a second life in the optical industry anymore. So we're a long way, unfortunately, from glasses becoming glasses, your spectacles becoming spectacles, lenses becoming lenses.
In theory, this could be a good option for dealing with these specialty plastics. It could also help solve the question of what to do with the other materials, like frames made of metal or the hinges. Plus, some people who wear glasses still opt for glass lenses. It seems like glass lenses should be easier to recycle too, but Andrew says that it's actually complicated because of the protective coatings that get applied to lenses these days. Okay, Neil, so now that you've heard all of that, were you surprised by any of it?
Yes.
What exactly were you surprised by?
Well, first of all, I didn't realize that people were flushing their contact lenses down the toilet. I had no idea that people did that.
But you know who's guilty of that?
You?
not currently. In my defense, have I lost my job now as an environmental reporter? No, but years ago when I was still living in the States, when I think back, I know that I did that there, but I couldn't tell you why. I don't do it anymore, though. Does that help?
I think it does. I mean, I've never had contact lenses. I've always gone for glasses. And one of my takeaways, actually, I've been doing a pretty good job here because, you know, reusing the glasses and not, you know, changing the frame each time. I'm very good at that because I'm really bad at having my glasses adjusted. I should adjust them far more often and buy glasses more often, but I usually have them much longer than I should. And then when I go, suddenly I can see again.
Yeah. Funny how that works. But, you know, I have to say, like, ever since I was researching this, I find myself staring at people's glasses and also thinking, which probably comes across as very weird, but I find myself thinking about how, you know, if you have, like, different colors of plastic or different materials, like, how much more difficult that is to recycle or to break down. But I was even thinking, like, I hate wearing my glasses, and I have, like, two or three pairs at home. Yeah. And I was trying to figure out, like, where would I even take them? And this is also part of the issue of, yeah, how can you recycle them or what can you do with them? But, yeah.
I never really considered what materials actually go into my glasses. What are the frames made of? I never even considered that there may be, you know, different shades of gray, so to speak, and one might be more environmentally friendly than the other. Something I will consider next time round. But, of course, as one of your interviewees said, there is a lot of greenwashing, and there's no clear labeling yet, is there, for glasses in this sense?
Yeah, but I think it's there was one thing that didn't make it into the report that I thought was interesting, and that was on the topic of contact lenses. When I was speaking with Andrew Clark, he said there is a contact lens on the market that you only wear overnight, and it helps correct your vision. I'm not going to try to explain how it works you wear it overnight, apparently. So you don't wear them during the day. You wear them overnight. But you can wear the same pair of contact lenses for up to a year.
I'm just looking to our technician here. I've never heard of this. This strikes me as completely wacky. So you have them in at night when you're actually not looking at anything. And then in the daytime, you take them out.
Yeah, apparently it does something with your cornea. And I don't dare say more than that because I'm not an expert on this topic. but it is really interesting to consider how it's this thing that a lot of us can't live without. But like these people that I spoke with, there's so little information out there that even they are really digging for it or having to do the research.
Wow. Kathleen, thank you very much for all that input. It was super informative. I really do appreciate it. And I learned a lot about my own glasses and contact lenses, which I don't wear. Don't know whether that's going to change, though. But I hope also our listeners took away a lot from this. And we'll be right back after this short promo.
Don't Drink the Milk. Weird name for a podcast, right? But it will all make sense, I promise. And no, it's not a podcast about milk. If you like historical intrigue, a bit of culture, and a sprinkling of controversy, this one's for you.
The arguments of homeopathy are based on, like, sand, and the sand was pouring through my fingers.
I'm Rachel Stewart, and for this new podcast from DW, I'm travelling around Europe, tracing the backstories of objects, ideas, and movements that you know well. But maybe you never really stopped to think how these things got to you.
condoms are known as French letters in the 19th century. Syphilis is the French disease, but in France it's the Italian disease.
Join us to follow the strange journeys of these everyday things and see how they change shape as they're exported through time and around the world, by force, by chance, or by choice. No need to pack your bags. Just subscribe to Don't Drink the Milk wherever you listen to podcasts.
This week's episode of Living Planet was produced by Kathleen Schuster. It was edited by me, Neil King, and our sound engineer was Jürgen Kuhn. If you have any environmental dilemmas that you'd like us to look at, please do send us a voice message or email to livingplanet@dw.com. And if you're enjoying the new segments we've been including in the podcast recently, why not write a short review on Apple Podcasts, or if possible, leave a rating for us wherever you get your podcasts. That's it from the Living Planet team for now. Take it easy and take care.